This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinion expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Critics say we should be watching these movies.
But we're here to see if they're right.
Join us as we take a cinematic journey through independent and classic film.
So dim the lights.
And get ready for the show.
This is Art House Legends Podcast, where high art and geek culture collide. Two podcasts coming together, facing each other. One head, Art House Legends. The other head, Legends Podcast. This is the Movie Dude Eric, and along with me are...
This is Kent, and hey Chris, what is best in life?
Hey, this is Chris, and you're all sluts, and we're dead already.
I'm Beef, and I like hot witch women.
And I'm John O'Lobster. Let me tell you of the days that you have to be high to enjoy this adventure.
In this episode, we're discussing Conan the Barbarian, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jerry Lopez. Or is it Gary Lopez? Gary Lopez, Sandahl Bergman, James Earl Jones, Max von Sydow, and Macau, directed by John Milius. So, gentlemen, welcome to the new and improved 200th episode of Art House Legends.
Did you guys do a previous 200th episode?
No comment.
Okay.
No comment.
So numbering podcasts gets a little squiffy sometimes, so that's kind of fun. But guys,
well, technically speaking, this is 201, but the thing was is that we had our April Fool's.
That doesn't count, right?
So
we take those out of rotation. With all of us coming together, I feel like having this many podcasters on one show, we should take a minute to bow our heads. Crom, I have never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we talked about a good film or a bad one. All that matters is that five geeks stood for many. Crom, grant me the strength to crush my enemies, the courage to see them driven before me, and the wisdom to hear the lamentations of their women. And if you do not listen, then to hell with you. Thanks, guys.
He does that same laugh and that same cackle that he's done for.
It's like, I needed the super cut of Arnold grunts, like when he's falling off of things, like, whoa.
What's the Mars one? Jesus. Where all he's doing is,
Total Recall.
God, totally him in 20 years.
And I know we're here to talk about Conan, but I feel like this is, if you're a film goer in the 80s, this is pretty much your first introduction to Arnold, right?
It's his first movie.
Well, it depends how big this was and how old
so
you
this
were
came out
at the time
after,
it came out.
So this came out after Terminator.
No, it did not. No, 84. Terminator's 84.
The only thing that came out before this with Arnold Schwarzenegger was the Mr. Universe movie. Because he won Mr.
Pumping
Universe
iron,
the year and a half before.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, are you forgetting the amazing cinematic zeitgeist of Hercules in New York?
That is true. That's a really good point.
Take it back. Credited.
Yeah. But I feel like this is kind of it. And this is almost, if you're a actor who speaks very little English, this is kind of your dream role, right? Is to play a muscle-bound hero who is not known for his, we'll call it, eloquence.
Thank God you got this role, because there is no fucking lines for you. It's all overblown music and scenery. And then they finally stitch. The narrator sucks, even though I love him because he became Splinter's voice. But they finally stitch it together with a couple scenes where it's like, this could have been a good movie. The blonde is talking about not wanting to lose him, and then he leaves her. Other than that, it's like, there's no acting in here. Oh. It's just muscles and flexing.
I guess there's two ways to look at this, because I'm gonna defend, I think, the art house side of this and say this is an actual artistic movie that is trying to basically do Heart of Darkness. Eric, do you want to back me up on this?
Well, it's unfunny that you bring up Heart of Darkness because the director, John Milius, is actually one of the co-writers. In fact, is the main writer for Apocalypse Now.
Right,
and
right.
Which is itself a retelling of Heart
yeah,
of
Darkness. And this was co-written by Oliver Stone.
Yeah, wait, that yes. Oliver Stone?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that yeah. Oliver
That's Stone? Oliver
Crom
Stone.
Was killed with a sword that went back and to the right.
Okay, now it should be said that Oliver Stone was the guy who did the first draft of the screenplay, and believe it or not, very little of that screenplay was actually what they put in the movie.
I believe it.
In fact, I will say that it gave kind of the template, but the thing is that screenplay was so drag-addled and so psychedelic and required such a huge budget.
The days
to
of
do.
High adventure.
Yeah.
Very high. We're talking about mushrooms and LSD.
The Black Lotus. Basically it's what pure.
But it's also interesting because when John Milius had gotten a chance to do this movie, and he was actually trying his hardest to get a part of this project, he looked at the screenplay, hated it, but the way he saw it was, well, if I could make this somewhat, make it, I could do whatever I want with this because nothing I could do would be as batshit as that script, and they will say yes to that over that script, and I can do whatever I want.
And I kind of feel like there's a Star Wars overcorrection of Star Wars came out, it introduced fantasy or it reintroduced fantasy epic, and people naturally thought, well, what can we do to kind of capture the same idea? It doesn't have to be outer space. It doesn't have to be lightsabers and laser blasters. But what can we kind of weave in that's almost an archetypal story and tie it to that?
This is also D&D kind of becoming big around the same time.
Yes.
So we should. I mean, this is a prototypical adventuring party.
Right, and it's not just Conan that gets the treatment in the 80s. We have a ton of stuff. Beastmaster, help me out, guys.
They were
like,
all
what
getting,
else gets
they
thrown
were getting all crossed in my brain when I was watching them, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the Beastmaster was a response to Conan. But I'm going to – I know this is going to sound kind of weird, but I'll be honest here that one of the reasons why Conan the Barbarian was even made was because, well, there was an Arnold Schwarzenegger. As Milius had brought up when he made it very clear that he wanted Arnold for the role as he was trying to sell Arnold to a producer, the Dino De Laurentiis, like, either we get this guy or we have to build Conan.
Right. Yeah, you have to put prosthetic muscles on somebody. It's not – you're not going to get a guy that big.
Isn't that how some movies roll, though? I mean, look at Underworld with what's her hot pants and leather. I mean, they envisioned it for her forever, but they always said, we are never going to get her. Granted, they didn't have to build a prosthetic ass.
Well, it helps when you have the director be her husband.
He wasn't at the first time or the second time. After that, he was. That's why there's 8 of them now. But
do you think, though, that I mean, obviously, Dino De Laurentiis is a big name in filmmaking, and so this has bona fides of a respectable picture. And I mean, I know we're going to come back to the score and Basil Poledorius, but just the idea of you're taking a chance on this unknown actor who kind of can speak English, but at the same time to make a big budget movie. And again, $16 million is respectable
for 82?
I think for 82. So to take that chance, and really Milius was envisioning a franchise. Like, he was envisioning James Bond.
He wanted
movies. 12 yeah. movies. He wanted
well,
to
the director's commentary, he says Conan's story should be 3.
But I mean, it ends on basically Conan will return as King Conan eventually.
Right. Give us a few movies.
Yeah. And so to kind of say, okay, we're going to take this chance on Arnold, but at the same time, the Conan the Barbarian stories had been around since the 30s. So there was a established catalog to draw on, and this film draws on a few of them.
That is true. But at the same time, though, I think that even, especially if you look at it for, as a filmmaker taking this, and understand, even as much as Milius wanted three movies, Dino De Laurentiis, he's a bona fide, but he's also extremely cheap. I don't know if you have ever kind of studied on Dino De Laurentiis. The reason why he is one of the most hated producers when it comes to filmmakers is because he will drive down the price so much that at some points filmmakers have to actually pay for things themselves to get it onto the screen. He is extremely notoriously cheap.
Well, and this was filmed in Spain. I mean, it's kind of a spaghetti western in a way.
That it definitely has. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Spain offered great scenery.
Yeah, beautiful.
Movie.
Yeah.
I mean, just yeah.
Well, there's a reason why Spain is used for spaghetti westerns. Why Italian filmmakers would go all the way to Spain to make their westerns there. I mean, it has wonderful vistas. It's there's areas that are protected so that you don't have to worry about a whole lot of people trampling all over the scenery and having that kind of damage the environment. You, especially if you kind of know how to do something really quick and really cheap, you can get away with a lot in Spain with very little overhead, with very little government interference. But yeah, the thing is that Milius was ambitious, and that's one. That's one of the things I'm going to say that is to his credit. You know, he had been a screenwriter for forever. He has done a couple. He had done a couple of smaller budget films prior to this particular point. Like I said, I believe he won an Oscar for a screenplay for Apocalypse Now. He was also responsible for the Indianapolis speech in Jaws, which I don't know if you remember Lobster.
Quint.
That's
great.
He is. Yeah. It also doesn't help that his best buddies are George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
Well, yeah, and I want to kind of come back to that idea. And again, I think we need to start digging into this a little bit more. But there's definitely... This is a setup for an epic, and I think if this is the origin story, obviously it's rewriting some of Conan's origin from the original stories, but the way that it approaches it is to set up this is a character figuring out who he is.
Yes, but I also think that this is a film that is trying to kind of go beyond that. The thing is that when it comes to Milius, yeah, he is interested in the origins of Conan, but I also think that he's also kind of like a kid in a candy store. It seems like this is his only chance that he's going to get to do something like a Star Wars. So he decided to throw everything that he could into just one movie. And so, you know, he does have the teaser of something later, but it also the film doesn't depend on that later. So, you know, it's one of those things that is left open, but within itself, it's a self-contained film. And he puts philosophy, he puts, action sequences, massive special effects moments. He throws, major character. He adds characters. I mean, you have, five major characters, all of which have more lines than Conan himself.
I mean, that's helpful, I think, given the situation, right?
Yes.
Did you guys
and enough testosterone to kill a baby horse.
Do you guys have a favorite non-Conan character from the film?
Chris, why don't you start us off on that one?
The Samurai Jack fan of me likes Macau, so yeah, I'd go with him over Conan.
I love Macau. Yeah.
Mako?
There you go. How
I don't
do
know.
Damn name.
Yes.
There's a reason why Mako's got a fan base that is as fervent today as there is back in his payday.
Yes, and it's called Uncle Iroh. So
he is a genuine badass. I freaking love this guy. But what about you, Kent?
Valeria. So she just kicks. She has good lines that she delivers well, and she kicks ass.
And she.
I'd watch a movie of her.
You which, could.
Well, they did kind of have one kind of called Red Sonja, although it's not.
But she's
her.
Not
well, she,
Red Sonja.
She passed.
Yeah.
She was offered the
she's
lead and
it.
Passed on it and wanted to play the villain. But Beef.
I'd have to agree, Valeria for sure. Totally Russian name. Oh, and I like how they made all the people from the steppe be white. All the mongrels are white. This is long before anyone gave a shit
white.
About race shaming.
Sure.
I mean, come on.
Sure.
Anyways.
I love Thulsa Doom. And I in particular
yes.
love the first scene that you get with Thulsa Doom where he is where it's basically just him staring at the camera. But the camera POV is Conan's mom.
Oh, you mean James Earl Jones?
James Earl Jones, right, yeah, right. Thulsa Doom. Darth
Maybe,
Vader.
I love that hair.
The hair is
the one.
Is the shit.
Yep. the page boy haircut is good. But the look, the way that he holds that look, and then it's so ambiguous but so threatening that you're kind of like, so he's just staring her down, right? Like, what? He's just going to stare. And then he's turning back. They're going to let him go. And then you see him spin around. And then the next shot is just of Conan and his mom's hand kind of pulling away. That, I'm like, Thulsa Doom, you son of a bitch.
Spoiler alert. I like
okay,
that it's a beheading for a beheading, though. I mean, really.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah.
I love the fact that when the head falls, it's like out of
yeah,
out of frame.
It's out of the
yes,
frame. It's
classy.
Not.
Yes.
It's not gratuitous, but it's
no.
so much more traumatic.
But the jugs later
because
aren't,
if you think like if you think
yeah.
in that the artistry of that shot is that you're trying to figure out what's happening as young Conan is trying to figure out what's happening. He doesn't understand.
That makes sense.
What's happening. He doesn't understand why his mom's hand is pulling away. He doesn't understand what, you know, what's falling in front of him until he understands it. Like, and then as he understands, you understand as the viewer. And I think that is really something.
Yeah. I will say when it comes to favorite characters, I'm surprised no one said it, but Sabotai. I fucking love Sabotai.
The wolves.
Now, I'm curious to see how many gamers we have among us, but do Conan, Valeria, and Sabotai kind of look a little familiar in 80s gaming?
I was... Oh, wait. Valkyrie Barbarian and... from Gauntlet.
Yes.
Elf needs food
yeah.
badly.
Yeah.
In fact, it is well known that they did kind of use the... non-royalty requiring,
yeah, that's good.
You know, changes.
I like it, and you also have
the
wizard.
Yeah.
I mean, the cover to the original Hero Quest board game looks like this party
don't shoot
too.
The food.
Yeah,
and it's fun. This movie is about Conan, but it's also about building his party, and you kind of get everyone coming together.
It's so
and then
long.
They go on the.
I feel like Wing right
they go
now.
On their, but they go on their first mission. They have their first success. Then they get captured by the king, and I just Max von Sydow, I love it. Like, I just love the setup for it. Yeah, pacing's an issue, but I kind of love that pacing's an issue with it. It lets you breathe it in a way.
So I guess the next thing we need to bring up is there is an overall question that the film is constantly asking throughout the film, which is. In shorthand called
is
the
volume too long?
It's brought up by Conan's father, and
I said,
"Is the constant question? Is this movie too long?
Is the
should we end now?"
I also said, "Is the volume too loud?"
Yo.
No.
All
right, yeah, the Riddle of Steel.
The Riddle of Steel.
Do we ever get an answer to the
no.
Riddle of Steel?
Well,
what
you have
is
contradictory
it? What is
you
it?
Have contradictory answers. You mean you have flesh, which you can command to do whatever,
yes.
but flesh can betray
yes.
you. Steel will not betray you, but you can't just sit Steel down and say, hey, Steel, do
yeah.
this. Because it's just going to sit
yeah.
there.
You can turn into a snake, but...
Oh, the snake arrow. Flesh. Come on now.
You can turn a snake into an arrow, but...
I actually there is an answer to the Rule of Steel.
All right, I think we should, I think we should do that.
It comes in the form of a game itself.
Yeah, we should do that in a round. What's the answer to the Riddle of Steel, Eric?
Paper, scissors, rock.
Okay.
Okay.
But no, seriously, think about it, though. Because, I mean, yes, Dulce Doom is correct. The man is the one who wields the steel, yet the steel is the one that can break man. Yeah. So it's a cycle of violence. Is the same thing, is also kind of brought up in regards to Kron being the god of the mountain, whereas Subutai's god is the god of the sky.
It's over the mountain.
While the mountain will hold strong, the god of the sky oversees the mountain.
Okay, next.
And Conan doesn't get pissed off that he's told his god is under. He's like, that's something to think about.
Yeah,
for later.
I'll save that one.
Okay. Yeah. He's cool with that. And it's cool with, you know, multiple religions existing in the same realm.
Kent, you have died and gone to Valhalla. Krom asks you, what is the Riddle of Seal? You say?
It is the question that can never be answered, for there are answers on all sides and all are right.
Okay. Beef, what do you say to Kron?
Get down!
Get to the chopper! Wait.
Wrong movie. Oops. What about you, Chris?
I didn't have an answer. I like Beef's answer, man. That's
all right,
that's
good.
Yeah.
All right, the riddle of steel is that the strength of a sword or any, you know, slicing, stabbing object depends on its ability... Yes.
Yes.
The strength depends on its ability to bend. So something that's rigid and cannot bend will break. Yes. Very true. But a sword has to be able to bend. It has to be able to change. It has to be able to flex in order to be durable. At the end, the sword that Conan's father made, which was stolen by Thulsa Doom, broke. It was broken by the sword of Krom that Conan finds in the cave. So ultimately, Conan changes. He surpasses his origins.
His birthright.
He's brought up he's brought up as first an orphan, a slave, a pit fighter, a thief. He grows, he changes. Ultimately, he's going to become a king because of his ability to adapt to new situations. Thulsa Doom relies on his power. All he cares about is strength, and ultimately is it's fleeting. The effect that he has, even his followers, his legacy does not last past his own death. So fail.
All right. Well, it's also kind of interesting because, especially considering that the film is also throwing God in there, because we have three major gods.
I think it's showing you how faulty that the quote unquote belief in all of these gods can be. None of them really gets you any further than Krom. I guess Krom's a right god.
Krom doesn't give a shit about you. Krom could care less.
Right.
All Krom cares about is put on a good show.
The last thing you want is for Krom to actually
notice you. Yes.
So here's something I found very interesting. The film starts off with a quote from Nietzsche, right? Who is probably one of the most well-known 20th century philosophers.
Sure.
One of his biggest, one of the things that is his biggest claim to fame is the fact that he calls out that God is dead.
Yes.
But the quote is that which does not kill you makes you stronger, right?
Yeah. Here's what I'm thinking, though, because I get the sense that this film is strongly philosophizing Nietzsche. Nietzsche is both interested in the fact of man conquering nature, but also man conquering God. The idea of the Übermensch, the ultimate man, right? And
who could that be?
I don't know. I'm thinking
a camel punching motherfucker.
Yeah.
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 I love that scene.
Fucking camel. Yeah. I see that. I mean, I could see the inclination to look at the Nietzsche quote and say, you know, this is about you know, the greatest human specimen, and we're going to put him on display here. But I think it goes back to the Riddle of Steel. The Nietzsche quote is that which does not kill you makes you stronger. Just like you know, a steel sword, you know, has to be able to withstand stress and strain and without breaking.
Well, it's tempered by stress and strain.
Yeah.
Make it hot and then shove it in the
snowbank. They right away open the movie.
Like Beef's dick.
They right away open the movie with a sword being tempered by stress and strain. Yeah.
Very, very true.
Right.
Yes. And if you really want to dig into that particular scene, you could almost say that we're not just seeing the birth of a sword, but we're seeing the birth of Conan.
The Anvil of Crom.
You know, molded.
Yeah. That's the piece of music is called the Anvil of Crom.
Crom bless thee.
Crom.
Crom.
Do you want to see me strip over here? I'm shy.
Well, what? That's kind of interesting.
How is it interesting? He just says, come look at my big dingus. I want your robe.
Well, look at it this way, though. When you watch that scene, notice that the first character that we see in the film is Crom's father. The second character we see is Crom's mother. Conan's father, Conan's mother. And then it ends with Conan himself in the fire of the sword.
In the original origin of Conan, he was born during battle. And that plays in the remake. They do that. They do the true origin
of. Oh, okay.
Now we gotta watch that shit.
Nah, it's fine.
No, you don't.
Can we spend maybe a minute talking about Robert E. Howard and the origins of Conan the Barbarian? Has anybody read any of the original stories?
Nope.
No, I've never read an original. Oh. I was more of a John Carter person.
Okay, so. You can get them on like Kindle super cheap. I'm reading. I'm about. Let's see, according to the Kindle, I'm 85% through the original batch of Conan stories by Robert E. Howard, and they're pretty great. I've read some of the newer stuff written by other authors. People like Robert Jordan, who went on to do the Wheel of Time series, wrote Conan stories. So it's pretty cool. But it's so interesting the way that Robert E. Howard crafts the character, because on the one hand, he is this hulking, brute barbarian of a man, but he's smart. He's not an idiot. The reason that he survives is that he is world savvy. He doesn't always get civilization, and kind of rules don't make sense to him, but he is able to fit in all of these different areas. And he goes from being a pirate to being a bandit lord on the steppes and eventually a king. And in fact, the first Conan story, he is a king. And everything from there is kind of told in flashback, which is cool. But it's...
Well, I had a curious...
Yeah, go ahead,
Eric. Well, I was just going to ask, Lobster, in regards to... since you have read the Robert Howard novels, have you read any of Edgar Rice Burroughs' work?
So that's actually next on my Kindle. So I have the John Carter series is next on my Kindle to read. It's kind of fun to go back and read these. So they were written, he started writing in the early 30s. He was a contemporary of Lovecraft, actually. And Lovecraft was a big influence on Robert E. Howard. If you look at some of the stories, a lot of times when he talks about magical things happening, it's not magic in the sense of, you know, we think of sorcery. It's like an eldritch horror or something from outer space that's come to Earth from time immemorial is doing bad shit, and Conan has to deal with it. So that's fun in a way. Certainly it's influenced by other pulp stuff that he's reading. He has one story that's basically a frontier story, like a Western. But it's really cool to imagine Conan in that scenario.
Believe it or not, they actually
Conan
made a
the
movie.
Gunslinger.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But he also, Robert E. Howard wrote Solomon Kane. He wrote Cull.
Oh.
So there are other stories that kind of pick up from that. What's fun about this movie is the crucifixion scene is lifted from one story. The sneaking into the tower is lifted from another story. His lover dying and coming back to life is lifted from yet another story. And her name in the story was actually Valyria. So it's kind of fun to look at it and see how the authors of the film have lifted from existing Conan stories and kind of made a whole new thing. Obviously, the origin of Conan is quite different in the originals, but this, you know, it's a cinematic. They take some license with it.
Yeah, and that's very true. But I guess for me specifically, one of the things I found very interesting, because I have read one of the novels, is, and the reason I bring up Edgar Rice Burroughs is because, in a way, it feels like, as much as he's pulling from Lovecraft as an inspiration, his structure feels a lot like Burroughs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's and he wrote in serial. So, you know, yeah. He wrote a chapter in a magazine, you know, when he could get it, you know, until, unfortunately, he took his own life.
Is a movie about Robert Howard. I forgot the name of it.
It's called The Whole Wide World. It has Vincent D'Onofrio and Renee Zellweger. Them. Yep.
Yeah. It's a good movie. I liked it.
So, actually, side note, when was the first time any of you saw this movie? Or am I the one that's old enough to remember it on VHS?
You are probably that person.
I can remember it on VHS. I remember the current well enough to go, God, that was a good movie.
I remember the cartoon show, the Saturday morning cartoon show.
Okay.
Yeah, it came on the same block as Rambo. Yeah. You know, back when they were doing radar movies.
Oh, Jesus.
It's cartoons. Saturday morning cartoon shows. Yeah. Yep.
Actually, if you want story time with Kent and the Ancient.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a guy who was a year behind me in school, and we will not use his name in case he's listening and going and possibly could be embarrassed.
His name was
Sobotai.
Yeah,
we'll just hang him on.
Could go. Why aren't
we'll
you saying my
on
name?
The tree of woe.
Anyway,
the tree of woe.
In his sophomore year of high school, he lived two blocks away from school, and basically his parents weren't home when he got home. He'd come home every day from school and put in this movie.
Yes,
every day. So one time in spring, like
you asked
I
him,
walk over
did
to
you, did he ask you what's best
school.
In life?
I walk over there after school with a bunch of us who are hanging out there one day. He puts in the movie, and it's on in the background. He walks into the kitchen to get a drink, and while he's walking, he's reciting all the lines. He's doing all the action on screen.
Yes.
Like, take a step, turn your head and call, and grunt. Ooh, like, exactly. Like,
see,
oh my God, could you stop it? You've seen
this
movie.
I understand that.
Like a fucking badass.
I did it with Encino Man and Big Trouble in Little China. I'm just saying. I know those two.
Awesome.
But
yes.
I saw it as a kid once or twice, and I hadn't seen it since then. And I remembered seeing it as a kid, but I didn't remember enough of it to be enjoyable. This whole
so all of you saw it. All of you saw it as a kid.
Hours and
I didn't.
I don't think
I saw it as a kid. I don't think I watched it until later on. Although I've always, for some reason, I've always had a strange love and fascination for the character of Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah,
he's one of two Funko Pops that sits on my computer tower next to me while I podcast.
God, I need that Funko.
It's the blood-stained Conan.
He just likes the guys in furry boots.
I do like his furry undies. What can I say? But there's also the Conan is the inspiration for He-Man or Thundar the Barbarian or you know, there's all kinds of stuff that Conan has been the inspiration for, and you know, you could read it into Tarzan, you can read it into John Carter as well. I mean, he's an archetype of a character. But a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that some of the developments in the Conan world can revive the character a little bit, do him some justice. Yeah. Would be cool if the new Amazon series is good. It would be cool if I know Marvel Comics just got the rights back to do the print Conan stories, so I think that would be cool to see.
That he'll be in the next Avengers movie.
Well, I mean, just wait for Phase 5 after they kill off, you know, everyone. Yeah. They'll bring in Conan. They'll figure it out. But
Based on how you read the novels, were the novels sexist or
no? This was just the 80s.
I know it's novels
again.
Are
they're
30s,
written in the
30s,
so
sexist. Yeah.
there are times where there is a bit of that, but there are also strong female characters. There are female.
Well, you had to serve. You had to be strong to survive in that world.
Right. So, I mean, like, right. Valyria is actually a really good archetype in that she's a strong female character. She has her own agency. She makes choices and then accepts consequences for them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it really is.
Right.
And really, in parts of the film, she's more courageous than Conan and Subutai. So there are characters like that in the originals. There are characters who are – now, again, I'm going to say that this was written in the 1930s. Robert E. Howard grew up in rural Texas, did not have a lot of formal education. So he does use a bit of racial stereotyping, but it's also reflective of what's in other things that he's reading. Do you know what I mean? So –
Right.
Again, like a lot of people will say, well, you know, Robert E. Howard was a racist. Well, you know, you could say that about pretty much everybody, you know, based on the words that
he
they
was from Texas.
Based on where he's from, what his background is.
Two of five people are from Texas. In this
so I feel like you can defend it in that sense. And certainly there are also evil people who are not, you know, of a certain race. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting to look at. I would recommend them. I think they're fun to read, especially if you want to dig into it. And the nice thing is they're all short. Like, it's magazine length, so nothing goes on for too long. It's written in a serial style, so it keeps moving.
But out of curiosity, since we're on this particular subject matter, do you think that this film shows racist tendencies?
I don't think so.
Not really.
I mean the stereotypical Mongolian, that's about the closest thing
that,
I can think of to
so
like, a, like
funny story is
these guys
is
are Mongolian,
the,
they're always on the steps.
The What's Best in Life is actually lifted from a biography about Genghis Khan. So like that's lifted straight from that. I think it's also influenced by in the 70s and 80s, like cults were a big thing. Like people were worked up over cults. So I think that aspect of it plays with also kind of what's going on at the time. James Earl Jones being the leader of the cult, I think that's an intentional choice. I don't know if he's trying to break away from the Darth Vader typecasting. But James Earl Jones.
You mean the cannibalistic sex cult?
Mufasa is a commanding presence. So seeing him up on Pride Rock, telling people how it is, you know,
it works.
I might sign up for that cult. Put me in the orgy. Put me in the orgy room and give me a bowl of ham soup. I'd sign up
for the cult that had the biting and killing of vultures. I mean, because that shit.
That is. Lifted straight out of Robert E. Howard. That exact scene. In fact, as I was reading it, I went, holy shit, he's about to bite this vulture on the neck. Holy shit,
I thought he did it.
I
was going to drink the blood to sustain him, though. I'm a little...
He does. That's what he does.
Well, it's a little bit weak for that on the scene, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they're trying to tone it down.
I mean, eight pairs of jugs. I know it's 82.
Plus all the feathers. Yeah.
I know during director's commentary, the cult is loosely based on the, I forget the name of the
Jonestown?
Cult.
Jonestown.
Yeah.
They're all drinking the Kool-Aid.
Even though walking through the desert when you encounter them, I was thinking,
Can we talk about that cult for a minute? Because let's say Conan broke into the cult headquarters like 3 days earlier, and then... All of a sudden, he doesn't put 200 of his people in surrounding clasp hand ring around his cult headquarters with the snake pit, and then Conan just sneaks up and slices his throat. Seems a little easy.
Yeah.
Well, also, what's the motivation for just randomly turning into a snake? Like, why at that moment did he go, you know what? time for some slither time. I'm good with this.
I think he's going to eat somebody.
Oh, he was going to eat somebody? He went down the hole and devoured someone?
It's called rattler porn.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And it just looks cool. Yeah. And he's used,
I like the guy who had his weapon was the giant hammer. And then he swung it and knocked the building over and was like, whoa.
I like when he came back to hit Conan's fake helmet hidden with a super spike trap. Yes. I'm like, what if the bad guy went around the wrong side?
Straight out of Home Alone.
Well, then he know it was a trap and just ignore it. And then Conan stabs him because he's going, haha, what a fake trap.
You know what another big influence is? I think Seven Samurai.
Yes and no.
Kurosawa. I mean,
there's definitely a sense of honor. There's a Japanese honor code Bushido element that's going on.
Yeah, head for a head.
Conan.
Yeah.
Well, how about
I
when
always
he
that
think
about up
it,
on my
Conan
dates.
Doesn't really act like a barbarian. He doesn't use barbarian tactics.
Well, what are barbarian tactics?
Well, I mean, what you'd say is, well, okay, the engineering all those traps is probably not as barbarian, but
I don't know.
But
they were smart. They were
the fight.
They were living in huts, but they had forges and they were making steel and stuff like that. So they're barbarians, but they're not primitive. That's kind of an important distinction I think that Howard makes in the stories.
Barbarian
is that barbarian means uncivilized. It doesn't mean stupid.
Yeah.
No. What I mean by barbarian is that when it comes to barbarian fighting, it's just no rules. It's just, you know, I will use anything in my...
But weren't they supposed to be mongrels?
Eyeballs.
Weren't they supposed
to
be, like, the mongrel horde? So lots of horseback riding
mongrels,
and arrows?
Actually.
I don't think they had... I don't think...
What,
I don't think they
people?
Had anybody
Conan?
In the steppe looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger ever.
Well, no, they were hill tribes,
Conan's
mountain people.
Conan's people are supposed to be the ancestors of, like, the Irish and Scottish.
Well, they're Sumerians, which means they're the mountain people. So in the original Howard stories, the backstory on Conan is that there's a neighboring kingdom called Aquilonia, and Aquilonia kind of starts expanding and is pushing in on Sumerian lands, and everything's fine, like it's peaceful, and everything's fine. And the Aquilonians are just doing their thing. And all of a sudden, one night, the Sumerians, as a united people, come screaming out of the hills and destroy the city of Venerium. And, like, they just wipe it from the face of the earth and then just go back into the hills. There's no peace treaty. There's, you know, no extended war. That's just like, don't fuck with us. And Conan was there, so he was 15 years old when that happened. Sorry, guys, I have nerded out heavily.
No, I can like the backstory because you don't get any of that in this high.
Yeah, in the film again,
music.
The film it's
phenomenal.
the quick, dirty. He gets strong by pushing a wheel in the desert for no reason.
By making they're taking grain and they're grinding it.
The wheel of pain.
The wheel of grain.
And then he learns to fight. The wheel of grain. He learns to fight in the fighting pits. And
oh,
and
hold
that
on,
kind of
hold
thing.
On. I had something for that.
Am I the only one who wishes Pat
hold
Sajak
on.
Would have been
I
there?
I had something for that. Conan. Oh, shit. Oh. No, I had this. Hang on. I got to go back a page. He's like Captain America with the gauntlets. It's Captain Conan with the gauntlets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, Wakanda.
Fuck. I had it here somewhere.
When Captain Conan throws his mighty shield.
Is there? I guess. Is there anything else that is notable here that we should discuss before we? I guess rate it twice is what we're going to end up doing. I think, but
well, the sketch bits is quite a bit going. But okay, if you thought the movie was too long, what scene would you have cut?
Because I would have tightened up the origin story. So
okay.
I think it would have been cool just to be like, and then Conan, you know, journeyed rather than have him be a slave and a pit fighter and all that. Just be like Conan was a friggin' orphan.
And he's a badass.
And he wandered. Yeah. He wandered the world and had to fend for himself. And you just kind of do a montage of young Conan journeying across the world. Yeah. Yeah. Getting bigger every
time.
Could
have cut a good half
hour
there. Easy.
And like every 30 seconds, you see him chug a glass of milk, and you see him with the milk mustache.
Or, you know what? Hang on.
And, better because it builds strong bones,
yet,
you guys.
Just drop down and hammer on a cow.
Does a body good.
Or whatnot's teat, you know?
Yeah. He's just constantly punching livestock in
camel.
The face.
I didn't quite get the point of the scene with the witch demon thing.
Extra titties, bro. This is 82. What are you thinking?
I guess, but it didn't really move
extra
the plot
titties.
That much. Unless it was an original story. Unless it was a
well, you know,
segment
you know
of
the
an
scene,
original story.
You know the scene that they did cut is when he kills all the wolves. Because in the one scene, he climbs out of the hole and he's got the sword with him and the wolves start lining up. And then in the next scene, he's walking
and he's
covered in wolf skin. He's got his
not
sword
just him,
wrapped
his
in wolf.
Sword
yeah,
is covered.
His sword is wrapped in wolf skin.
There's enough implication.
True, there is implication.
Yeah, PETA was already upset about the camel punching. So.
The jugs. Yeah. I don't think there was a PETA in 82.
But.
Oh,
no, there's PETA. PETA was around.
They've been around.
But I think we should all be very thankful that Conan did wrap it before he tapped it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be a ghost baby daddy. That, you know, 18 years, more like 18,000 years haunt you.
They said he was bred, so.
He was studded.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah.
Well, which means they would have confirmed it and gone, yep, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
Yep, he's good stock.
He's good stock. Good
he
breeding
works.
Stock.
Founded March 22nd of 1980. It is 4 days older than me, so I'm not much far off by saying it might not have been around.
Okay. Nice job. Nice job, Beef.
Yeah.
Again.
I do have one quick question. Though,
yeah, go ahead.
And I would like, I'd like to make mine the last question if possible.
Sure.
But now... obviously, we have Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, which was PG-5 because, as Kent made it very clear, kids loved this movie.
They do.
And they wanted
they
to
especially
sure
like the boobs and the blood.
It's because of the jugs that the kids mm-hmm. love
the
movies.
The
titties.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't
which
it is wasn't
probably
the titties,
why Conan
the
Destroyer
violence.
Tanked at the box office. But now it's always been kind of on the rumor mill that they're going to be making the third film, which was always
promised,
kind of either called The Legend of Conan or King Conan. And that Schwarzenegger was going to come back for this. Now, this is a rumor that's been going on for about 10 years now. And John Milius was supposed to come back to direct it. Unfortunately, he had developed Alzheimer's about... like 7 or 8 years ago, and there's a documentary about John Milius that is heartbreaking. If you have, it's on Amazon Prime right now. But all the same, though, would you like to see that final chapter to finally see Conan become king with Arnold Schwarzenegger or with someone? Like
he's been, what you call it again, a handful of times, and I mean Terminator, and he's going to apparently be it again. Yes. So you know what? He's going to play an older actor doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'd sit down and watch it. It can't be any worse than this, even though this is childhood nostalgic.
It literally cannot be. Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
If there's titties and blood, sure. Why not?
I remember there being some rumor at a time where it was going to be King Conan as Arnold versus his son, and at the time the rumor was Triple H as the son of Conan, which ties in because Triple H really wanted to do a Conan movie at one point.
I saw Triple H in Blade 3 and no.
Yeah.
I'd still like to see. I haven't seen the reboot. I'd still like to watch that again since I've sat through this one with what the hell's his name?
Momoa, yeah, Momoa. Aquaman, Khal Drogo, Ronan Dex.
Yes,
I would
just be prepared to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's tame by comparison to this, but it's fine. I think the cool thing about the King Conan, if you look at the original stories, is they're some of the most fun because one, he becomes king by his own hand. He literally strangles the former king of Aquilonia on the throne, and people really like that decision. Imagine a unpopular leader who was So it would, it could be timely. At the same time, so what inevitably happens in these stories is he, you know, there's a plot against him because he really has no claim to the throne. He's a usurper. He ends up not having a son in the story, so there's not someone to carry on the line. So eventually he has to, you know, battle his way back to the throne. Or in the story that I'm in the middle of right now, he's decided that he doesn't want to be king anymore, but he's not going to put up with the fact that someone else got the better of him. So if it's the last thing he does, he is going to conquer them, or barbarianize them, which is kind of cool, you know, just for honor's sake. So it's fun. And I think an aged Arnold Schwarzenegger, I know he just had open heart surgery, but if he was up to it, man, put him, he could grunt and snarl his way through. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they can get Patrick Schwarzenegger to play his son.
Yeah. Who knows? All right, so we have two ways of doing this, and I.
Well, before we go into rating, we have one last thing we have to do for Legend or for Art House.
Oh, Legends. Okay, yeah.
Kent, what is the geek sheet?
Oh, you know, we covered half this geek sheet during our discussion. I mean, besides Arnold, let's see, what movies haven't we mentioned? Let's see, Running Man, Total Recall, Predator, Terminator, The Governor,
Twins.
Oh, wait, that wasn't a movie.
Junior, the last action hero.
Yeah, actually, Twins and Junior are technically, yeah, they would be science fiction-ish. Yep. So,
what's the one where he's action hero?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
James Earl Jones between Vader and Mufasa, and you know, just in general being James Earl Jones. That we all know. Now, the king in this is
Max von Sydow.
Von Sydow, who's
we talked about before
in The Exorcist, Dune. He was in Star Wars 7.
He replaced Kevin. He replaced Kevin Spacey in that one movie. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding. No.
No. That was Christopher Plummer.
I know. It was Christopher Plummer. I get the two of them mixed up all the time.
Same.
Yeah.
Don't forget Seven Seal.
Right. I almost, yeah. Our Valerius, Sandro Bergman was the villain, Red Sonja. She's covered. She hasn't done too much major.
Yeah, she died
parts.
In a car accident. It's pretty sad.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't see that. I thought she was, oh, man.
And you mentioned Mako as Splinter. What else would we know, Mako?
Haku and Samurai Jack. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, Haku and Samurai Jack and Uncle Iroh in Avatar.
Awesome.
And actually, it turns out he was a semi-reoccurring in MASH, the series.
That's awesome. All right, last...
He's getting his Oscar-worthy role in Sidekicks, starring Chuck Norris.
Yeah, but that's Chuck.
All right, last thing. Favorite score by Basil Poledorius. Is it this or Hunt for Red October, RoboCop? Go.
Oh, God.
Starship Troopers.
Okay.
That could be. I mean, he went to school with... director
Milius,
and so he knew all these people and his credit list is
I was listening
huge.
To Hunt for Red October the other day and was like,
that's pretty fucking good.
That's a good score. But I don't know whose group me I posted this in, because I was going back and forth a lot. There's a live performance. If I didn't share it with you guys, I will. There's a live performance of Riddle of Steel and Riders of Doom. And the conductor gets so into it. It is fantastic. It's got the chorus there for Riders of Doom. It's so good.
Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I will share it with you when we're done. Yeah.
Nice.
So, if you're listening to this podcast, just do a YouTube search.
All right, so for you guys, this is maybe your first time with our system, but we rate on a scale, and it changes for every movie. So Beef is going to talk us through it, and I will assist.
All right. So for Conan the Barbarian, are you going legendary?
What daring, what outrageousness, what insolence, what arrogance, I salute you.
Legend of its time.
Governor Conan the Californian.
Cult legend.
Just another snake cult.
Awesome.
What's best in life?
Entertaining.
Punching a camel. biting a vulture, fucking a ghost.
Mayable.
Crom has forsaken me.
Forgettable.
Do you want to remember this movie forever?
Abysmal.
The Reel of Pain.
Spring Breakers Highlander D&D.
Kevin Sorbo's Call the Conqueror.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of, if you do not like this movie, then to hell with you. So you get to choose. You choose one on the list that's your rating, and we'll start.
Wait a minute. Am I to understand that Highlander is a movie you guys did
that
not
is,
like?
That is a wing choice. We have not revisited that since I joined the podcast,
I'd
but
actually
we will
sit down and rewatch it. But yes, Spring Breakers, Highlander, and D&D were all in a category of.
Yeah, D&D, I took off just for.
We may have to debate that.
That's at a later date with a friend that's not here. So let's pick one from the list,
right,
fellas.
Okay.
Conan, and we'll start with Kent.
Well, I've got a question about Legend of Its Time rating. Do you mean a legend of the 80s?
Yeah, that maybe hasn't endured forever, but certainly if you look at films from that period.
Then I would say, yes, it is a legend of its time. There are issues with how it aged, especially in the practical effects department. But maybe it's just a nostalgia. Maybe it's just me wanting to go back to the wonders of VHS. Oh, God, shoot me now. But it is. I say it is Governor Conan. Legend of its time. I give it 5 of 6.
Beef, who goes next?
Someone?
Chris?
I went with entertaining, because a lot of it hasn't aged very well, but I did enjoy certain aspects of it. The score is amazing. I like the last 20, 30 minutes or so. I think those are great. The rest is kind of give or take. So, yeah, entertaining for me.
I will go with, ooh, awesome, because I probably quote What's Best in Life the most. I think I've driven my wife crazy the past couple days because I keep saying, what's best in life?
The limitation of your women.
But then I like to do it in like a Jamaican accent. Well, be like the lamentation of the women.
Okay.
I don't know why. It makes me happy.
Well, it's different.
It's always different. Yeah. Or I'll try different accents out. But I think What's Best in Life is a movie that is 2 hours of fairly mindless entertainment. Roger Ebert said that this film is the perfect fantasy for the alienated pre-adolescent. And I think if you're an alienated pre-adolescent like Kent's friend from childhood, this is a great movie for you.
Pre-adolescent?
Adolescent. Yeah. Because it's just so fun and stupid. And, I mean, there's good stuff in there. There's good stuff to kind of go back and discover about Conan the character. So it's awesome for me. Eric and then Beef, I think.
All right. So I'm actually caught because as I was watching it for this podcast with my girlfriend, we had a lot of fun kind of riffing on the movie, but halfway through she fell asleep. She was bored to tears by this movie, which is one of the reasons why we're riffing on it. That said, though, I admire this movie probably more than I like the movie. Now, the first time I saw it, I actually saw it on USA during one of those Arnold Schwarzenegger back-to-back movies, and it was okay, and I was okay with it. But the more that I see it, I see kind of more of what John Milius is doing as a director, and I admire the fact that he's putting so much philosophy and so much thought into kind of, you know, the direction that he's wanting to turn this movie. That said, though, it's not a movie that I come back to enjoy so much, but at the same time, I definitely understand why other people do. So I say that it's just another cannibalistic sex-nate cult.
Ooh.
Cult legend.
All right. Well, I will have to wrap this all up in a tiny bowl of a pile of shit. I have three parts to this, not the pile of shit. We have a legend of its time for the Governor Conan from California, because it is really a legend of its time. For everybody loved it. They thought it was good, and at least my childhood, I thought it was good. Then I got to add Forgettable. Do you want to remember this movie forever? Because I clearly didn't remember shit from this movie. And then I have to add with a sense of nostalgia, because again, childhood. So if you do not like this movie, then to hell with you. So apparently I have to come out slightly on top of liking this movie. It was horrible, yet it was fun. The music is great. There's a lot of beautiful vistas. Arnold is, what, like 23? And
he is one of the beautiful vistas.
Yeah, right, exactly. Huge with that.
He's craggy.
That flowing hair. And then you got James Earl Jones with that flowing hair. I'm like, holy shit.
Yes.
How many mustaches flowing
wig.
Hairs can you get in the 80s? Oh, wait, never mind. Yeah, right.
All of them.
So, yeah. This is somewhere scattershot all across the board for me, so yeah. I am no help.
Mayable. Crom has forsaken us.
Beef, if I may say so, I not only have I am I a part of the Legends family, but I've actually been listening to Legends podcast for about 4 years now, and I have, especially since you had come onto the show, and I'm just speaking for myself here, I've admired how you've grown as a podcaster and as a guy who is expressing his opinions about movies, and I raise my glass to you, sir.
I don't know what that means, but I thank you for it. I think, but I appreciate it.
But now it's time for the Art House Legends rating system. It's a very simple system. We have three ratings here, and the question that is asked is, do you agree with the critics on the awesomeness that is Conan the Barbarian? Do you give it a pass, meaning that you agree with the critics? Do you give it a fail and say that the critics are absolutely wrong in their opinion of this film? Or do you give it a maybe and split the difference? And Beef, why don't you start us off?
So the critics liked it, and I'm supposed to agree or disagree? I would give it a fail then. If I'm rating it now and this movie came out now, I would be thoroughly disappointed.
All right. Lobster.
I would give it a pass. Again, the critics at the time were pretty divided. I think ultimately the retrospective opinion of this film is that of the three Conan movies that they made, this is the best one. And if you want to experience a fairly competent sword and sandal movie that also has some artistry, you would watch this movie. I mean, you'd watch Gladiator and things like that, fine. But Conan the Barbarian is up there in the top eight or so
oh my
of those
God.
Type of movies. but again, I'll say I think it's entertaining. I think it's a good time. And so for me, it's a pass.
Chris?
Somewhere between a maybe and a pass for me. I just...
you can say fail, dude. It's okay.
Split the difference. Fail.
I just... I feel like it's a bad movie, but there's good stuff in there. So, yeah, I'm mixed on it, I guess.
Kent?
Oh, this is classic pass. Come on. Team Conan, Crom forsakes you if you do not like this movie. In Soviet Russia, Crom forsakes you. I do not forsake Crom. Anyway, Eric.
Well, honestly, the thing is, despite how I feel about the film, I gotta say that there's a lot that is very cinematic and very intriguing about the film that I absolutely admire. Also, the fact that this is John Milius. I mean, this guy basically put testosterone onto celluloid to the point where even when this movie starts, it will knock you out if you weren't prepared for it. And I kind of admire that about this filmmaker. And his next movie is going to be Red Dawn, for crying out loud.
Wolverines.
I mean, I gotta give him some respect. And on top of that, yeah, the acting is laughable.
It's Austrian, I think, is the word you're looking for.
Well, a lot of it's Spanish.
Not just Schwarzenegger, though. Everyone is a bit laughable in this movie, but I think it's also kind of the charm that the film has. I admire the writing. The writing is definitely stronger than the performances. But overall, though, I just... Yeah, there's a lot that I kind of admire on a cinematic level, so I'm passing it for that.
Good.
That said, though, if you can't enjoy cheese, you are not going to enjoy this movie.
This is a warm hut you should pass by and keep walking on a cold night. So we do something on Legends Podcast, which we will include you in for this piece of it. We talk about news. We kept it short this week because we knew we had a lot to talk about. Beef. What time is it?
News time.
All right, so the first one that we're going to talk about is Colin Trevorrow, an Art House Legends fan favorite from Safety Not Guaranteed, who made his big budget debut with Jurassic World, was going to direct the final installment of the Star Wars trilogy that's currently playing out, but he was departed. Force ghosted, I guess, from that job. But he is going to return and direct Jurassic World 3. Also, they're making Jurassic World 3. What do you guys think about this?
Right. Well, we're going to have to see how Jurassic World.
Yeah, J.A. Bayona is directing that. So.
The implication is Jurassic World is getting destroyed. All the dinosaurs are going to be homeless. So, what is Jurassic World 3?
It's a whole world of Jurassic.
You know what it is? It's sight.
Honestly, you know what I really want with Jurassic World 3? And if this actually happens, I will see Jurassic World 3.
Uh-huh.
I want Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I think that's a natural thing if you're calling it Jurassic World is to have, you know, there's fucking dinosaurs everywhere, man, and that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good for real estate prices, home insurance.
Home insurance is fucked.
Yeah. No, it's extinct.
Ha ha, you pun bastard.
Ho. Chris, I know you're kind of tuned in with the film scene, at least locally. Right. What's the early buzz on Jurassic World 2?
Enough said.
Most of the critics, I don't know. Most of the critics that I know of didn't care for it, but most of the people I know just fucking love the first one. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I know
Well, then maybe you should go back and listen to our conversation.
Yeah, I know we talked about
it.
Yeah, we talked about it a while back.
To me, it's like the new Star Wars. The first one comes out, and it's like, oh my God, this is so nostalgic.
The second one comes out, and they literally blow it all up. And then you're like, oh, all right.
It's fun, but, you know, yeah they do blow it all up. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. What do you think, Colin Trevorrow, just in general, Book of Henry and so forth? Yeah, that's about right.
Well, he did. I thought he did all right with Jurassic World 1.
I did too. There were many people who were upset about footwear choices in that movie, but I think by and large.
Did you say he did Safety Not Guaranteed?
Safety Not Guaranteed, which
that was good.
Yes.
We all liked here.
Another episode we did on Art House Legends.
Very early.
Yes.
So, is there a podcast or a sub podcast where people could hear maybe some more popular films talked about in such a manner?
Well, one of the things that we're doing over on Art House Legends is we're starting to talk about larger geek type films that are coming out with a different type of spin. We call it fan art. And what we do is we take one geek, one film nut, namely me, and we see if it meets both the fan needs as well as is it considered a good film? And so far we've had two episodes.
Please tell me there's flaccid on the rating system. Sorry.
I don't want to give too much away, but there was some mean things said about a certain big budget film that totally tanked.
Which one this year?
Our next episode is going to
Red Sparrow.
Well, we just started.
Ready Player One. No. Yeah. Oh, Pacific Rim Uprising.
Come out swinging, huh?
Let's see. Good. The second piece of news, we do something called Trailer Dump. So we're talking about one trailer. This is a trailer for Westworld Season 2, which the season starts April 22nd. If you watch the trailer, the piece of music that you heard covered by Legends podcast favorite composer Ramin Djawadi was Heart-Shaped Box by Nirvana.
I love that cover.
It's an amazing, fantastic cover. It's
the
fantastic
first
trailer.
Had so much delicious music remade. I couldn't even keep up with it. And I do a podcast about it.
Well, that's Jonathan Nolan though. Nolan, especially with his work on Person of Interest, learned how to do great music, especially in action sequences.
So. So season two of Westworld, we're not going to spoil too much from the trailer other than it looks insane what they're setting up. We know we're going to get Samurai World.
Shogun World.
Shogun World.
I could be wrong.
And all kinds of stuff. I kind of want to see Conan World.
No, I would go to.
That's what's best in life, really.
If you want to hear more ramblings on Westworld, go check out westworldweekly.com and hear me and mostly me just babble my brain about robots and shit and sentience. So, yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
I need to watch season one. I've only seen some episodes, and I'm like, I need to see this movie.
Did we ever release the episode we talked about Westworld?
It's out there on both. It should be on both streams.
Oh, you did. Okay.
So we talk about the original Westworld movie somewhere.
I actually listened to that episode. Okay. That was. I will
talk
say,
about
though,
talk
I
about a movie that's borderline unwatchable.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, it wasn't okay. that
That's
bad.
Why he said Come borderline.
Come on. Yeah. All right. So, what's coming up?
All right. So, over on Art House Legends, our tradition of talking about the best picture winner is coming back around, and this time we're talking about Guillermo.
Mm.
We're going to be we got 2017's breakout hit The Shape of Water, Academy Award winning.
I still need to see that.
I still haven't seen that either, and it is on my list.
Yeah.
And I love it.
You should have seen it in theaters.
I have decent surround system, so I'll be all right with fish sex, especially if it's dolphin sex. I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I should spoil anything about that.
Put that in your blowhole.
No spoilers.
But you know,
what's coming up for us?
Next time, Legends Podcast, Cool Runnings, Jamaican bobsled man.
Then the lamentation of the women
to the beach. Boy. So yeah, that'll be good for shizzle.
Well, this has been momentous.
It has been monumentous.
Well, gentlemen, is there anything else that y'all want to plug for the Art House Legends crowd?
Plug everything. Anything you do, plug it.
Westworldweekly.com and wholesomeaddiction.com.
Okay.
Lobster?
I got nothing to plug except the Riddle of Steel.
Flesh is better than steel.
This you can trust.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for the 200th episode of Art House Legends.
It has been our dirty pleasure.
And what episode is this?
What the hell are we?
367.
This has been 367 of Legends Podcast.
And episode 200 of Art House Legends. Good to be back, even for just once.
Oh, you'll be
we
back.
We always come back.
You'll be back.
You'll be back. We don't have this music cleared. You'll be back.
Especially when we get back to July and Art House Summer. We have an amazing line of movies that we've just come up for that month.
Good.
And we're going to be lining up guests all around the block. It's going to be a lot of fun this summer.
All right. Well, why don't you take us out?
All right. At this point, this is the Movie Dude Eric.
This is Kent.
And this is Chris.
I'm Beef.
And I'm John a Lobster.
And Fiend.